Blog Talk Radio.
Peace. Greetings. Welcome to another installment of the House of the Moorish King, a.k.a. La Casa del Rey Moro. In the House of the Moorish King, we deal with two central things, or two things, I should say, decentralization as well as digitization. Make sure that you're strapped in. You're going to be listening to a very powerful episode this evening. I'm going to give everyone an opportunity to share the contact information. Make sure that those that you think will be interested are on board, because we have a very, very powerful show set for everyone. I am your host, D. Miller L., a.k.a. Eshu Miller L. I have my co-host with me.
Brother Free, L. Beck.
Peace, fam. How you doing?
Pretty good, man.
That's what's up. I want to make sure that if you are a listener for the first time, that you know where to find more information about us. Please visit www.mba. That's M as in Moab, B as in Bitcoin. So that's mbassociation.info. Again, I'll repeat that, www.mbassociation.info. You'll find out more information about the Moabit Association, and all the things that we have going on right now, as well as many of our future plans, and just information in general on Bitcoin and the entire cryptocurrency space. I think that it will benefit all of the listeners to make sure that they visit that page. Free, what's the word, man?
Oh, man, you know, making it do what it do, just experiment with Open Bazaar, decentralized marketplace. That's a project that should be jumping off pretty soon because I've got everything on my end. We just got to fix up a few things and get the shop open, you know what I mean? So,
hey, man, that's powerful. I actually, speaking of that, I saw a little article today about the Open Bazaar, seeing as it just opened. I believe within 24 hours of it opening, somebody already put up what we would recognize in general as an illegal substance, marijuana, for sale, again, on the Open Bazaar right now. Free, why don't you, you know, while we, you know, allow our guests an opportunity to actually give a call in, why don't you kind of go in a little bit as to, you know, the nature of the Open Bazaar. What does that mean? What does it mean when you take an eBay and decentralize it? Because that's basically what this is, right?
Indeed. So what we have here is, you know, the ability to basically run our own marketplaces and our own economies via Bitcoin, right? So you're going to have people posting what the U.S. government would deem illegal right now, you know what I mean? And looking towards the future, you know, I don't know if everyone's aware, you know, about the scheduling reduction of marijuana and all that other stuff like that. But it's coming down the works where, you know, the U.S. government is no longer going to control it in the same way they did because they see the profit that can be made from it. Said, you know, our decentralized markets are going to have a lot of work to weed out a lot of the what they would call illicit and illegal things that the Silk Road provides. I mean, it's just human nature that humans are going to want commodities that are rare or hard to get or banned by the quote-unquote government of the day that also drives the value of those said commodities up as well. So, you know, with our decentralized market, we're going to be looking towards, you know, selling products that are, you know, legal and healthy and everything like that. So, you know, vendors, we are going to be taking sign-ups pretty soon for vendors that want to join us and, you know, vend through our particular platform or, you know, start their own thing. So that's what we're looking at with a decentralized market called Open Bazaar. and you can visit them at openbazaar.org, and you can download the client yourself and see how it works for yourself. And I think that is the way to trade or to buy products with each other right now, other than looking up a listing that would come up through openbazaarbay.org. So that's that in a nutshell. More information will be put in the NBA Circle of Peers group, which we have already put a good amount of information on Open Bazaar already, to my knowledge.
Yeah, yeah, that's actually where they can find the article about, you know, within that 24 hours of Open Bazaar being there, marijuana appearing as one of the items that you could purchase.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and they
probably
didn't mention how many of the people, like, are, you know, basically trying to get screen names and trying to, you know, take up the space so that when others come along, they can kind of sell the space to them, you know what I mean? Kind of like the dot-com bubble. So.
Right.
Should be really interesting.
Indeed, indeed. You know, we have I think we have another announcement that that we should make, but I would like to actually bring in our guest. I do see caller on the line. Caller ending 3264, brother Anari, if that's you, you can definitely speak up at this moment. I'd like to bring you into the conversation. Peace, Anari, are you there? All right. Not an issue. Yeah, I'm going to give him another second. Let me make sure that I take care of this as well. Okay, so, yeah, long story short. Okay, I think that might be the brother there. Long story short, you know, our guest is actually tied into our next announcement, and as opposed to stealing the thunder from my brother, although he has multiple things that he can speak with us about. I want to give him an opportunity to kind of lay that out there, man. I'm really excited about it. Free, I know you haven't necessarily been on Facebook in the last couple of days, but I wanted to ask you, were you aware of Anari's announcement? I'm definitely aware, but I'm wondering, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I have an idea of what's going on, and it has to do with investing and trading cryptocurrency. So, like you said, without letting too much out, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep moving.
Let's see here. But you know, I think that we have other things that we could announce as well. So, I think one of the first things that I'd like to make mention of right now. Is the idea that, you know, we're actually beginning to move forward with the decentralized applications. I think that's what where we're at now. You know what I'm saying? We're in a different place now. We were once mostly just dealing with education. Would you agree?
Yeah, advocacy and education as opposed to application, which is now the, you know, the arena we're in. Like you said, we're using Open Bazaar and also using Ethereum. These tools have allowed us to really engage, you know, in the application part side of this decentralization.
Exactly. I think that, you know, I think that that's extremely important, man, that we even understand that, because I think more times than not, when we start to, you know, work with people, and I'm talking about the listening audience, as we begin to work with people, we kind of tend to just get caught up in this continuous, I'm going to be the teacher, you're going to be the student, and we're kind of just going to play this little formal role, as opposed to, like, let's get down to business. Let's actually make this happen. You know what I'm saying? I think that that's hindrance.
Yeah, that was, you know, one of the reasons we went the route we had to go with the conscious community, is because we saw a lot of that taking place, you know what I mean? So just a lot of lecturing and, you know, a lot of debating and not really much coming out of it, though, you know?
Exactly. I mean, you know, it appears that thing continues to grow, but what seems to be lacking is the action. What seems to be lacking is, you know, real activity. It just seems like the community is involved in passive activities. Even if they do get active, it seems to be a reactive thing as opposed to a proactive thing. So I think what we're demonstrating now, you know, has much more to do with, you know, being forward thinking and understanding the nature of what it is that we're up against, and how are we going to bring some kind of conclusion to it? How are we going to bring, you know what I'm saying, some closure to this thing that's just got us so anxious, you know what I mean?
Indeed.
Like the world that we live in today will have the average person anxious, and it's not, you know what I'm saying, it's not hard to understand why. You know what I'm saying? Things are crazy. Like things are going in a direction that are just like, I don't know, man. It causes one to really, really, we'll say if they're religious, it could shake one's faith. You know what I'm saying? If even if you're not religious, you know what I'm saying? It's very challenging. You know what I'm saying? The world that we live in today.
Right. Because, I mean, you still have faith in something. Like, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
If that faith is in money, that's definitely being shaken. If your faith is in your job or your position or whatever, that's being shaken as well. So.
Indeed. Like. So okay. Actually, our guest hasn't called as far as I can tell just yet. So I think, Free, that we can actually get into, you know, our announcement in particular. And when our guest gives a call, we'll be able to, you know, allow him to lay it out in its full fashion. But we will mention what it is that that we're working on right now, a brand new thing. So, yes, as you said, we're talking about investments. We're talking about opportunities to invest. And with that being said, you know, when Brother Inari actually gets on, we will have a situation where Inari will better describe, this will be his second time here at the House of the Moorish King. He will describe now a much more pointed description of Gamerholic, the platform in which you can actually game. This is where the name comes from. It's an arcade of sorts. So you will be able to game on the platform. It's a gaming platform, right? And I think from our first interview, we came to understand that, you know, he can essentially plug in various types of games. And now I think what I'm talking about is the consoles. There are various gaming consoles, right? Like, which one you got, Free?
Xbox One, PS4, you know, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. So with that being said, you know, I understand that he can incorporate games of that nature. There may have been some difficulties with that. I'm not too sure we can actually follow up with them. But the idea of the gaming consoles and being able to bring those various games onto the platforms and people earn Gamerholics based upon, you know, their winnings. So I think that this is already one of the reasons why Inari's platform has been described as having the potential to be a multi-billion-dollar platform.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I guess what he spoke about on the first show was, you know, a lot of the formulas that did not work because of chargebacks with PayPal and everything like that. So now being able to reintroduce the platform with account betting on Madden and stuff, games like that, where people would say that the internet connection drops, so I don't want to pay for that game or whatever like that. You can't renege on these type of situations anymore because you're using cryptocurrency where there's no chargeback. So I think that'll be interesting to hear, you know, how he's going to implement the new strategy. I know as far as I've dealt with the Gamerholic platform, the games are more of, you know, online games, as opposed to the console games. So definitely want to hear, you know, more about the platform and its development since then.
Exactly. Like you said, we'll let Inari get into that. But our announcement is actually more based upon the other facet of the platform. And what Inari has done, or at least what is a fact concerning this platform, is that, you know, the platform does have a cryptocurrency that goes with it, and it's called Gamerholic Coin. And now, you know, you need Gamerholic Coin to be able to play. You can, from what I understand about the platform, very easily go from Bitcoin into Gamerholic Coin. But what we're talking about is for you to be able to play the games, the coin that is accepted is the Gamerholic Coin. So, okay, now that that's established, you know, where does this announcement come in? Like, what is the announcement? So we have created an investment club of sorts, a group, where essentially we are going to kind of specialize in cryptocurrency investments, as well as just being a group where we can share best practices. So this will be a group made up of individuals. It will also be made up of organizations or even businesses. Right? So again, a group in which we share best practices, where we assist one another with, we'll say, onboarding into investing in cryptocurrency, the whole education behind that, the basic, you know, kind of walkthrough, we'll say. You know, we want to kind of provide that to one another. So we are now going to start an organization. We actually just came up with the name. So it's the MBA. Obviously, that will be, we'll say, the root name of the organization. But it is a cryptocurrency investment consortium. So the CCIC, Cryptocurrency Investment Consortium. Again, a consortium of individuals, businesses, and organizations, and again, specializing in cryptocurrency and the idea of investing and trading, et cetera. So now, you know, what we're looking at is we'd like to first kind of gather around Gamerholic Coin. This is very important to us, only because, one, we do wish to support our brother. Obviously, he is doing some fantastic work. He's been all over the media in the industry. I think I've at least seen, you know, 5 articles about Inari and the Gamerholic Coin and his, and the overall company, the parent company that, you know, has produced those things. So definitely he has that credibility, you know. I've used the platform myself, played the games on it myself, but I'm very, very happy and very, very excited to start getting into the trading aspect, because I think that that's an additional value to participating with the platform. You know what I'm saying? What are your thoughts on that, Free?
Yeah, man, I feel like trading is a game in itself. You know what I mean? You have to be able to see the patterns. You have to be able to crunch your numbers. You know, you have to be able to execute at the right times. You know what I mean? So, and that's all things that are associated with gaming. You know what I'm saying? The only thing I would take out of it is the eye-hand coordination part. You know what I mean? that's about it, you know, because clicking on, you know, a number here and there isn't as hard as, you know, playing a video game per se, but the same attention span and the same game theory kind of applies to it, you know what I mean? You have to see the pattern. You have to read the charts. You have to know how to crunch the numbers and know where your investment it could possibly end up, you know, in the next month or so based upon trends, based upon, you know, what's happening with companies, you know, all of that. So it should be very exciting to see this consortium at work, you know what I mean? There's so many of the, you know, Fidelities and, you know, all of the different firm houses for, you know, U.S. currency and fiat and all that other stuff like that and what they're doing on Wall Street. So, you know, it's time to really take that whole kind of, you know, atmosphere and switch it to crypto, decentralize it, you know?
I just had myself on mute. My bad. Okay. My bad.
No, it's fine.
Yeah, so now real talk. This, what we're talking about now with the CCIC, again, Cryptocurrency Investment Consortium. This is, you know, I believe the seeds of something that is probably going to be a monstrosity in later days. And what I mean by that is, all right, so if we talk about, you know, basic investments, I think the average American especially, they tend to, like, really invest in the stock market. So they are investing in markets that are kind of, you know, bound or tied to America, right? Now, I think that there's also probably a large, you know, population of Americans that invest in what I'm about to describe. But I think most people in America, that is, are dealing with the American-based companies that have an IPO. They're buying shares in it, right? And there's some exciting companies. In fact, I think one of the most exciting things that has just popped off is Tesla. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And I don't mean they just started making cars popped off. I mean, they released model number 3. I'm not sure if there's more of a description to it, but model 3, Tesla car, within 24 hours of notice that it was coming out, and it's from what I understand, it's actually very reasonable as with regards to the price. I think it's like $30,000. You know what I mean?
Indeed.
So now, within 24 hours, I believe it was $7.5 billion in pre-orders. Now, for you to put money down or whatever to have the car built, like, that's one thing, but they're really talking about, like, what it will mature into when these people all purchase their cars in full. It's not to say that each person put up $30,000, you know what I mean? I think all you had to actually put up was $1,000. So, you know, once they actually crunched the numbers and did the math, today, this was within 24 hours, it was $7.5 billion. As of today, I believe we're talking about $14 billion in pre-orders. So this is like, I think in the article I was reading, it was saying this is like the greatest pre-sale ever, right, as far as the amount of money that is being generated or the potential money that will be generated, you know what I'm saying, on the back end. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, if you probably go back through history, you'll look at when the Model T Fords was coming out and how many people had bred up against that and all that. It probably would be similar to today, but like you said, the scale of money is just phenomenal compared to back in the Model T Ford days. So, you know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, it's a trip. It's a trip, you know what I'm saying, the more and more that I think about it, what is actually happening with regards to just, you know, different IPOs in the U.S., right, the different companies in the U.S. that are, you know, have equity shares or trade, you know, stocks or whatever on the stock exchange there. So what I wanted to bring to everyone's attention or at least move forward with is to say there is a market referred to as Forex. This is the foreign exchange. This market is gigantic in comparison to just the U.S. market. So there is, you know, we'll say there are billions of dollars, tens of billions, maybe even a couple hundred billion, being traded on the stock market. But when we talk about the foreign exchange, we're talking about 2, 3, 4 trillion, right? 5, 6 trillion, because we're talking about the globe. You see what I'm saying?
Exactly. And, I mean, that's where cryptocurrency takes over, too, because it's traded worldwide. It's not traded just, you know, U.S., you know what I mean? So
that's exactly where I'm going with it. So if cryptocurrency continues to move forward, and I imagine it will continue to move forward, you know, again, what you're actually trading on the foreign exchange is currency. Right, so you're literally wagering if a particular economy is going to do better than another economy. right? And you can bet on either side, we'll say. So you can bet it'll go up or you can bet that it'll go down and benefit, right, if you make the right call. So I believe, as we're talking about, you know, currencies and economies, you know, this is exactly what Gameaholic is. You know, Gameaholic is an economy, right? It's a means for money to flow. Not only can you put in money, but you can get money out. So it, you know, it as a platform becomes like a micro version of an economy, right? And, of course, it's the money moving around that makes the economy flow. If there's no money moving around and there's no flowing, then you don't have an economy at all.
Right.
See what I'm saying? So it's the same thing. It's the exact same thing. And in this case, you know, you putting money up, we'll say, in a Gameaholic coin, if the platform itself continues to increase in value, then you will benefit from, you know, how well that platform is doing, or in the Forex example, you will benefit based upon how well a economy is going to do, right? Or how poor it will do. So all of that being considered, you know, I think that that's what's happening here with this cryptocurrency. I think that it will continue to be used as a speculative tool, but I also think that, and I remember we talked about this early, but I think my mind has just now come to this conclusion. Remember how we was talking about, and I mean like on the Silk Road days, right? Remember how we were talking about, like, you know, being speculative with the coin, and I remember I'd asked you, you know, how many coins do you have, and you were like, you know, upwards of 30, 40, 50 coins, right? And much of that had to do with you trading. So now I still maintain my position of having a greater interest in coins that were actually doing something, right? And I mean, like, either it was a true innovation, the behavior was absolutely different, and we could apply it in a different fashion, meaning adapt in its truest nature, right, a decentralized app. If it wasn't doing that and it was basically just a variation of Bitcoin, I would lose interest rather quickly. But, you know, when I started to notice, we could have something else, you know what I'm saying? Like, we could have, you know, the name coins of the world, right? We could have the counterparties, right? All of these different projects that were being built utilizing the technology, I initially gravitated towards that. So I to bring it back into center. You know, that's what I feel like. If you're going to engage in a cryptocurrency and you're one to start trading, you know, how do you protect yourself from a Ponzi scheme? One of the things that I, in my opinion, that you could look for is to make sure that there's an actual economy or an actual system, right, a platform built for that currency. If there's no platform for the currency, it becomes questionable. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, you know. I mean, it you have to find whether there's an equity, whether it's what is its value, what it's backing it, what, you know what I mean? If you can't answer those questions about the currency, then it is like the other 888 currencies out there that are just kind of oblivious. I said there's about 100 solid currencies out there, and then there's, like, you know, 800 more of them that are just kind of just out there, you know, just taking up space, creating new blockchains. That's not a bad thing, but, you know, just a lot of, like you said, a lot of Ponzi type scheme stuff going on, and a lot of, you know, stuff to just stay away from, you know.
That's absolutely right. Let me go on ahead. I see Anari is trying to get through now. So let's go ahead and get them on. Pardon me, family. Let me go ahead and take care of this. I'd like to get the brother on as quickly as possible at this point. But yeah. You made a good point. You made a very good point, and I think that Anari is going to be able to speak to that as well. To the listening audience, I do apologize. for, you know, not having Inari on sooner. He will absolutely be on shortly. However, I hope that we've been able to satisfy your curiosity with regards to cryptocurrency and investing and maybe even how to tell a Ponzi scheme from something that's a little more solid that you can actually get behind. All right. Peace, Inari, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I apologize about the delay. I got caught up in a meeting station that took up some time.
You know what? I'm glad. I'm glad because, you know, Inari, you've been involved in a lot of activity. I've seen a lot of interesting things coming out as of recent about the platform, Gameaholic.
Yes, sir.
You were talking in the group as of yesterday and today. We've been going really, really heavy on an investing opportunity. I've already kind of let the listening audience, I've kind of tipped their hats a little bit. I let them know a little bit about what we talked about in the group. But, Inari, you have the floor. Brother, I'd like for you, if you want some direction outside of whatever you'd like to say, is tell us about these new things, especially the mobile dynamic that's now a part of Gameaholic. Definitely let us know about that. As well as I was discussing, we already informed the listening audience about some investment opportunities, so then you can kind of take it there as well. The floor is yours.
Okay. I do apologize, folks. I'm usually quite prompt, but we have CoinFest going on. CoinFest is a global awareness on cryptocurrency, so we're hosting quite a few graphic games for that. And some fires to put out in making sure everything is up and running. So I apologize again for being tardy with the conversation. Now, from the last conversation that we had until now, quite a few things did happen. We have three apps in the App Store now. The Gameaholic app is officially on the Google Play Store. I'm really excited about this one because it makes the platform a lot more mobile, obviously. But it also has a built-in wallet, so you can send Gameaholic coin. You can send and receive Gameaholic coin from to and from anybody, much like you can do with Bitcoin now. So that one I'm really, really excited about. The other app that's on the App Store now is a game called Grab It that was built for the Gameaholic platform. It's a way to just win free prizes. This uses the freemium model. I know the minute you hear free, your eyes and be like, yeah, whatever. I do the same thing. But it is a free-to-play game. You can really just jump in. You don't have to put up any credit card information, none of that. You play three practice games, and then you're able to start playing the games to win real prizes. Now, if you want to give yourself an advantage in winning the game, then you can buy extra tools. Freemium model works in gaming, but you don't need to play the game, right? And the last app that's currently in the App Store right now is an app called Bouncer. The intent is you get to pay the bouncer to skip the line at the club. Right. I don't know if we all go out as much anymore. I'm a little bit older. And as often as I go from, if I'm in Oakland, I'm in San Francisco, I'm in New York, I'm in D.C. and some other cities. If I'm, you know, want to go entertain myself and the bouncer doesn't know that I'm as special as I think I am, you know, I want to be able to just pay them their $5 or their $10 to go in. And so the app will allow me to do that regardless what city I'm in. And you know, the originality for that one really prompted me to go ahead and launch it. We built it at launch hackathon, and all the folks over there really liked the concept for it, so we moved on that as quickly as possible. And the intent for that as well, like almost everything that we put out is somehow tied into the Gameaholic platform, right? So you can imagine that able to use Bitcoin to bribe a bouncer. I don't want to use the word, I'm using the word bribe in a light sense. Or you'd be able to use Gameaholic coin in the future to make that same transaction as well, or to buy tickets to the club, or you know, buy gift cards for various venues through the platform. Right. The last question that you asked about the investment part. So we all know that, you know, cryptocurrency doesn't really have a barrier of entry. if somebody wants to buy $1 in, you know, Ether, Bitcoin, give them a Holy coin, they can do that. It's not like, you know, calling up your Charles Schwab broker and you, him or her telling you you need to have $10,000 a minimum for him or her to pick up the phone, right? It's also a great gateway to get people into trading anything, right? A lot of young people that trade cryptocurrency all of a sudden present them with Forex trading, they instinctively get it. It's the same thing, right? There are a lot of young people in the in the sneakers market, right? The same kids or young be packed up for camped out for 2-3 days to pay $200 for Jordans. You know, they exist in a trading economy. They're going to turn around and sell that thing for $500-$600. You know, 2-3 days later on eBay, they know how it works, right? And so you see a lot of those young people also coming into the cryptocurrency space because they already have that understanding of buy low, sell high. So what we would like to present is the exact same thing, right? Right now, Gamer Holy coin is trading at a penny and a half, or half a penny, I'm sorry, right? No massive, you don't need to go and spend your food money or rent money asking for you to do anything like that. But if you want to understand how trading works and just participate in community trading, then you can buy a dollar in Gamer Holy coin, $5 in Gamer Holy coin, and just see how it moves on the exchange. And I think that would be really, really something cool that that should be put together for you guys.
That's awesome. Inari, I want to say something. Prior to you joining the call, Free and I began to discuss one of the ways in which I personally, Free kind of agreed with me, but I said, you know, If now that we're talking about cryptocurrency trading and investing, one of the big concerns is a Ponzi scheme, right? A pump and dump, right? So what I said was that I felt a good way, a good rule of thumb, is to find out if there's like a platform or an economy already built around it, right? So, you know, there are many coins that exist that don't actually have purpose other than trading, right? There's not a platform associated. There isn't, like, purpose for the coin beyond trading. Like, for example, with Gamerholic, you need that coin. You could probably, from my understanding, you can trade the Bitcoin for Gamerholic coin to play. Can you also play with Bitcoin?
So
or
the
do
platform,
you need Gamerholic?
Ideally, I would like the platform to be Gamer Holy coin focused, right? But I don't think that we'll get too far by not including Bitcoin. Okay. Let me start with the first things that you mentioned. You're right. There are a lot of coins out there that have no use whatsoever, and it's put together a savvy bunch that group up. We're going to raise the price of a coin up to 10 cents and, you know, cash out and take off running, and, you know, then they'll create another coin out of thin air 2 weeks later and do the exact same thing.
Right.
Gamer Holy coin has been on the exchange for going on 2 years now, right? So it's not a coin that just got on the exchange last week. And it is a coin that does have purpose. You can use it to buy items in a store, and it's in gaming. It's in the gaming space, for crying out loud, right? We're actually creating an opportunity here where it's one currency across platforms, Android, iOS. If you want to play somebody on your Xbox or PlayStation 4, Gamer Holy coin, you can do that as well, right? So you're right in going the direction of vetting the coin, make sure it's not a Ponzi scheme, make sure it does have some real-world use cases. Your audience should know that, but Gamer Holy coin is not. Gamer Holy coin is something I think will be used by young people to make a good living for themselves. Someone in Sierra Leone right now, they can't get a job, they can't do anything, you know, can play some and win some coins and go get yourself something to eat, go buy some rice, for crying out loud.
You're right. You're right. We see it. We see that people are literally making a living today gaming. And I don't mean just in the creation of a game, right? I don't mean they just work for a gaming, a company that produces games or gaming consoles. I'm talking about people that are extremely, you know, they're just skilled at these various games on the various consoles, and they're making a living. Free, yeah. did you want to follow up with the question at all?
Oh, man, well, I had a comment more, you know, like you were saying, we talked about that in the first show, too. The community of people who are doing walkthroughs and who are, you know, auctioning off games and getting deals with the studios, but they're not the game developers, nothing. They're just playing, and they're creating podcasts, and they're creating streams and all of this other stuff where they're able to get tipped and paid for playing the game while playing it. So, I mean, like you said, and then there's the tournament, right? The tournament's where the big cash prizes are giving away at, you know what I mean, millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, for winning a Madden tournament or for winning, you know, a Call of Duty tournament or whatever. So, I mean, people
and
saying, like you said, someone sitting at home playing games, they're working on their career.
Hey, if you're a gamer, you're a gamer. It's time to knock off the shaming. You know what I mean? They got the the slut shaming. We're going to knock off.
Yeah,
so my thing is
we're
going to knock off the gamer shaming too, right, with this episode. We're knocking off the gaming shame, right? It's a grown man, right, beyond 45, talking about gaming, right? We're going to knock off the shame, and we're going to acknowledge that gaming is something for the young, for the old, for those that are right in the middle. Like, I don't know that that's a barrier, you know, anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it's ever been a barrier.
Yeah, very, very true. I mean, I'm pretty sure there were some moms and dads that were telling kids to turn off their consoles 10, 20 years ago when we had our Ataris and our Nintendos, and they didn't know this could have been the outcome. You know, I was a beast in Madden, man. Genesis,
I mean,
when the first Madden came out, I was a beast in Madden, man. But obviously, once you pass that certain age group, you know, even your girlfriends are telling you play video games too much, so there was a lot of gamer shaming going on.
And then ask how many people are on their Androids all day playing, you know, Candy Crush and, you know, Bejeweled and all that other stuff like that. And they might not consider themselves a gamer, but they're gaming during their off time when they're on the train, going to work, coming from work, or waiting for something. You know what I'm saying? People are gaming unconsciously now, so that, you know,
people don't even look up anymore on the train.
Right, exactly.
You know, you get on the train, everyone's looking down in their cell phone playing some kind of game. I mean, women are able to escape the gamer shame label a bit, but you're right, they are making billions of dollars, and they're making King.com billions of dollars now, so...
Yeah, I think it's time that we just kind of knock off the arrogance, right? Knock off the ignorance. I mean, even if you weren't arrogant about the subject, right? Maybe you're not shaming people that game or that are gamers. But my thing is that, you know, let's not only not be arrogant, let's not be ignorant. This is a major opportunity, and I want to even bring the focus back to, you know, Gamerholics. So, okay. Like you said, when you first got on, Gamerholic wasn't available on the mobile. I remember when I first started playing, I did have to have my laptop. And this was something that I would say held me back a little bit, only because I can do so much Inari with my phone. Tell us why you went in that direction. Tell us, you know, have you seen any immediate, because I don't even know how long ago you did this, Inari. Maybe you can let us know. When did this platform become, you know, mobile or available on the mobile?
All right, so I just launched it on the official Android app maybe a couple of weeks ago. And it's just at that stage now where that had to be done. It's a little bit more secure, because we had a problem with folks always creating multiple accounts, especially for the Grab It game. So once you move it up to an app, unless you have 10 phones, you're not going to create the 10 different accounts on the app. Maybe you could, but it's just a little bit more difficult. Now, I will also say, though, that I did a terrible job of listening to my audience when Gameaholic first came about, because there are a lot of cats in the hood that didn't have laptops. So my Gameaholic and another popular gaming platform that I'm not going to name was where a lot of gamers that played for real money, playing the NBA 2Ks and the Maddens for, you know, $120, they were mainly on that other platform. And the reason why they said that is because they could actually access it on their mobile phone, right? But at that stage, I was, and I remember a conversation that I had with a user at the time. It was a young man that's a, well, was a father, and he pretty much made his money playing Madden all day. And I got a little bit disgruntled, like, dude, you got a kid in the house and you don't have a laptop, but, you know, not being able to access the phone on your computer, you're making money, you're talking about money, but you don't have a laptop. So I wanted it on that shaming angle as compared to understanding, oh, this is what my audience wants. Let me move the site over to mobile. So I take full responsibility for that bad decision that was made back then. But now it is available on an app. Anyone all over the world can download it. Android, because it's, you know, it's a little bit more affordable globally, right? There are not too many kids in Sierra Leone with iPhones. And also for, we're going to start hosting some FIFA competitions. FIFA is more of a, right? So we need to be able to make sure that someone in Mexico or Honduras that wants to compete in the FIFA tournament will be able to do so on the platform. So building the Android app made perfect sense.
I like that. I like that. You know, I'll say this. I wanted to actually, this is just a sidebar. What do you think about the idea of the analytics that state, you know, those that have iPhones are much more likely to pay for their apps or pay, like put money into an app as opposed to an Android user?
Well, I mean, the statistics are correct. They spent more on the phone. They have more disposable income. I can, there's nothing that I can say to refute those statistics. It's been backed up by pretty much everybody in the game. And eventually, Gameaholic Coin will go to iOS. The Gameaholic platform will be on iOS as well. But, all right, so let me touch on this briefly, because I had a small conversation with someone about this earlier, right? Our community is a lot of iPhoners, right? But I don't think that a lot of people understand what is and what isn't their economy, right? What I mean by that is this. Usually if I go to a new town and I want to get my hair cut, I'm obviously going to a barber I've never gone to, walk into the barber shop, and I'm going to look for the brother that has a picture of his family, you know, on his stand, because that's the brother I want to give my money to, right? This is just these are just conscious decisions that I'm making now as an adult, as a freelancer that understands the politics that goes into a black man trying to make his own money, right? So that brother that got his picture hanging up on the stand, that's whose chair I'm sitting in, and if he's married, I'll, you know, tip him an extra $5. Because I want to participate in his economy at this present time, right? So if our community is mostly ours, and you get an idea, you can go on Alibaba right now, you can search Android phones, you can see some pretty cool Android phones that you can buy, rebuild, rebrand as your own personal phone. You can install some cool apps in it and whatsoever. But if you bring it back to your community to try to sell these phones, you better be ready to spend millions in advertising to compete about what they think a phone is supposed to look like because they're iPhone, right? So automatically, you've eliminated millions and millions of potential money coming into your economy because you're not giving yourselves the freedom to be able to have anybody come market their Android product to you that they want to create. I mean, you know, our celebrities have a little bit of leeway with headphones, but they're not going to touch phones because they know that's going to be a very expensive battle. You see what I'm saying? Right.
I do.
So we have to understand. So we have to understand what is and what isn't our economy. I'm not saying that you can't go get the nicest things that you want. MacBook, yes, you got to have a MacBook. They're just a little bit better. But for the things that you can control, I don't think a phone is, or I don't think an iPhone is our economy, because you're going to remove potential of billions of dollars coming into your economy if some young entrepreneur decides to launch their own version of an Android phone. They won't be able to do so. Or they won't be able to do so economically.
Understood. Understood. Freebie, do you want to follow up with the line of questioning?
So knowing the battle between the iPhone and the Android phone and what, you know, apps should look like, tell us a little bit more about how Gamerholic, like, functions, you know what I mean, in a sense. Like, what people see when they get on the app on their phone?
All right, so right now, if there's an app that I would like listeners to download, I would say both the Gamerholic app and more so importantly, the Grabbit game. I think the Grabbit game is more so what everybody's going to gravitate towards, because it actually have real action as soon as you download the app, right? The Gamerholic app you're going to keep just for your own Gamerholic coin wallet, and if you're a gamer and you want to challenge other gamers in Madden, Call of Duty, and so on your Xbox or PlayStation for Gamerholic coin or Bitcoin, then yes, the app is for you. But for the general audience, both genders included, all age groups included, then the Grabbit game becomes the I would like for the listeners to download, because as soon as you you download the app, you can start practicing right away. You can jump in a game to start winning Bitcoin or other prizes right away as well.
Sounds good. So it's not a casino, right? Because a lot of people might think, like,
it's not a casino. It's a skill-based game.
Right.
And it's not the kind of game that you're expecting. You're not going to see animations and things like that. I simply applied game mechanics to shopping, right? We made shopping a lot more fun. There are three buttons. There's the grab it button, the slap button, where you get to slap the grabs of other players away, and the grab it hold button. That's just the way of God. But once you play the game or just jump into a practice game, I'm pretty confident that, you know, after a few tries, you may not get it right away, but read the instructions, stick with it. After a few tries, it's a very engaging game.
You know what? Inari, you may not – I'm sure you do actually see the value in this, because, you know, we're dealing with jurisdictions. We're dealing with laws. You know, I heard gambling mentioned. Can you explain a little bit the difference between, we'll say, a game of skill or in the opposite, or what is it that you're dealing with regards to people having value up as a wager as far as gaming is concerned? What's going on with that?
All right. So I stay in the legal lines of skilled gaming. The outcome is based on your skill, not luck, right? By definition, they say you can't play poker because poker is a game of luck. Anyone that wants to tell me poker isn't a game of skill is a liar. But we'll let the folks in Congress make that decision for us, I guess.
And Onari, I have to. I apologize. I want to interrupt you for a second. So I'm a huge Texas Hold'em man. You know what I mean? Like a World Series of Poker.
Nice.
And in fact, it has been extremely helpful, because when I, you know, first off, just dealing with the concept of entrepreneurship, you're bound to understand what a venture capitalist is. And some of the best venture capitalists, or at least one of the best venture capitalists, I'll leave him unnamed, he literally described the nature of venture capital as, you know, a Texas Hold'em hand. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You get your two cards before you see the rest of the hand. You get your two cards, and then the flop comes out, right? Then the flop comes out. And you might hit off the flop. You might get the nuts on the flop, like you already know. Like, I'm sure, you know, we'll say Andreessen Horowitz. We'll say, you know, when they saw the flop with Facebook, when they saw the flop with Uber, you know, when they saw the flop. They already knew they had the nuts.
Yeah.
Right? So now I'm knowing, and for the listeners, you know, I apologize. I just threw some jargon out there. You might not understand the nuts. I'll say this one last thing, Inari, and then I'll give it back to you because I want them to know. It's not about being bold. Like, in common context, we'll say if somebody says they have the balls or they have the nuts, they're saying that they have the gall, right? They have the audacity. Now, in this context that I'm describing, this is like an old Western, right? It's an old Western film, right, where they pull up in the wagon, right? There's no cars. It's a wagon. And if you said that you was going to go all in, right, in those days, that meant everything that you owned. You follow? Everything that you owned, including the wagon. So what you were supposed to do was go get the nuts off the wagon, meaning you wasn't going to try to, you know, get away if you lost the hand after having gone all in. but you can go ahead and speak on that a little bit. Go ahead, bro.
But if for a poker fan, you understand poker is a game of skills. There's no luck involved in poker. But gamerholic functions in the game of skill realm where the outcome is based on your luck, not skill. So we're illegal in pretty much all but I think 7 or 8 states, maybe 7 states now, right? Where skill gaming is not
particular. Inari, pause for a moment, please. There's a background noise. I don't know if it's coming from your line, but I'd like for that to chill just so you can go ahead and speak. Go ahead. It's clear now.
Nice. But we function in the game of skill realm. Gameaholic is a game of skill platform. Your outcome is based on your skill, not luck. And that is legal in all but, I think, 7. Right. It's going to stay that way as long as the outcome remains that it's based on your skill, not luck. Now, if other game developers use the Gameaholic API to create casino games where Gameaholic coins accepted, there's nothing we can do about that, right? But Gameaholic itself is not going to make a casino game. Well, I will say this, though. Tunk, I've been looking for a Tunk card game. I finally found one, I think, last weekend. I found a Tunk game. But I really, really want to make a Tunk card. And I don't know if that would be considered casino or not, but that was one of my favorite games, and eventually we'll make a Tunk game, so I don't want you to take that promise of never making a casino game too late.
No way. Hold on. So I'm from the South. Hold on. A lot of people from the South. That's like our favorite game. Like Tunk is the game that brings people around.
Yes, sir.
It's an easy game to play. They put a dollar up. You know what I mean? Like, hold on. I can't believe you said Tunk right now.
Yes. Did you play Double If You Ream?
No, I don't think so. I've never heard of that. But Tunk,
yeah. I definitely want a Tunk card game, man. Maybe, I don't know, I'll give myself 2 years. We'll have one up.
Well, you know, and now I'm probably the wrong person to ask. Maybe Free is familiar, but, you know, I like, for example, I'm a spades man. I don't know how to play bid whist. Like, that's more of a mature version, we'll say, of spades. But, you know, I don't know how to play bid whist, but I can play spades, and I love playing spades as well. Is that a game of luck, or is that a game of skill?
Yeah, I would say spades is a game of skill because you have a partner involved. You got to communicate with your partner, and I would say it's a game of skill.
Okay, well, now that you said that, you know, I would definitely like to see that just for myself. I know as Americans, you know what I'm saying, we've been describing them as American blacks, and then we'll rock with that because I think the larger audience will understand. I would also say dominoes. Is that... And when you say you think, like, I really want you to distinguish what games are games of luck and you really can't engage in that, and what games are games of skill. Dominoes. What do you think about that one as well?
Well, if you're playing fives and dominoes, that's a game of skill because you actually have to add up you have to actually have, there's a score. You got to add things up, right? So I think it'll be fair to say that anything score-based should be a game of skill. Don't take my word for it. Consult your own legal professionals. But as far as, you know, our approach, anything score-based does require skill to gain to get the score. Should require skill to get the score. But if it's not something that we know for sure is, you know, we're not touching poker. We know that. We're not touching blackjack. We know that, right? But we'll consult the necessary people we need to before we release a game. But we don't plan on going with anything that's not a game of skill.
That's clear. Free, did you have a question?
No, I didn't, actually. I think y'all are hitting right on point on, you know, the mechanics of gaming and really seeing, like, because I think poker, like he's saying, blackjackers are dealer-based. So you can do the math probabilities on what cards may appear in a certain order, but that's still not based on your skill. That's based on the hand that you're dealt. So
exactly.
Yeah, you know what's funny? I have to acknowledge as a poker player, like, for example, you know, you have the bluff, right? Like, it's not that there's always a drawdown. Sometimes there's a bluff. And if you know how to do that, then that actually takes, I don't know if it's skill, because you're only getting a couple of cards and, you know, the cards that come out, you know what I'm saying? You don't have no control over that. So, you know, at the end of the day, any real poker player will tell you it's not even about the cards. It never really was. You know what I mean? It's about
very
behavior.
True. Yeah.
It was never about the cards. It wasn't. It wasn't, because any cards will win, even if your strategy is I'm going to hold the best cards, you know, the pairs or the face cards, right, the high cards, I'm going to hold these cards. That doesn't guarantee anything, right?
Yeah,
because
I'll
at the
tell
end
you
of
this.
The day, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, like at the end of the day, you know, there's any two cards can win. That's the point. Any two cards can win, meaning you could be holding some garbage, right? You don't even have a pair, right? Let alone a high card. You could probably have two numbered cards. So you already know the odds are you're going to get beat just because you don't have any high cards, right? 3-4, right? That's what you're holding, 3-4, right? Any cards are going to beat you, right? The majority of the deck is going to beat you.
Pretty much.
But you can win with those cards. But you can
win
with those cards. And,
right, so if you take away the aspect of bluffing, then it is ripped back down to its rudimentary math, you know, versus, you know, the probabilities, you know, of what cards will be played. But like you said, with the bluff aspect, that takes skill to actually bluff someone, or mind manipulation, Jedi trick, whatever you want to call it, you know what I mean, to get your point across that you're going to beat this person even though you have a hand that might not be as good as them. Knowing those math probabilities helps you bluff, right? If a person can't read your bluff, like when I first started playing poker, I didn't even know people were bluffing, and I was beating them because of my hand was just better. So I was totally, like, oblivious to the fact that they were trying to, you know, scare me off and everything like that, and it's just funny. So
let me say this, hold on, because that sounds like beginner's luck. Let me say this. I don't mean to stun on you. Hold on. So, like, listen. You know if you got the nuts, meaning a hand that can't be beat. Now, there is a chance that you had a hand that can't be beat each time you were playing. But the chances are you didn't realize there were other hands that could beat yours. Now, maybe the probability of them having it is slim to none. You know what I'm saying? However, at the end of the day, you know, I think that, especially with poker, you know what I'm saying? It was always about your behavior. It was always about how you held your hand, because you got to remember this. So, you know, you wanna get people to put as much in as possible, right? Especially if you have the nuts. If you can't be beat, then you want for everyone to go all in. You're hoping to God that you suck out. That's what it's called. You want to suck out the table. You want everybody to go all in while you have the hand that cannot be beat. Right? You see all five cards on the table. You got two in your hand. Right? Almost like a seven-card stud. Right? You make the best five hand, a five-card hand. So you're looking, and if you got the nuts, and sometimes you have the nuts off the rip, sometimes off the flop, the first three cards that come down. And this is why I want to bring it back to the venture capital, right? This is why I want to bring it back to even what it is that we're doing as the NBA right now. I let it be known, Anari, you weren't on the line, that we now have the Cryptocurrency Investment Consortium. Where nice. We'd like to share best practices for investing in cryptocurrency. And as far as I'm concerned, although they're involved in cryptocurrency, they should understand it. You know what I mean? Like, as far as what is investing, that's why we even went along the lines of the Ponzi scheme, because we want to understand that we're not investing in a Ponzi scheme, how to maybe even identify one, right? Meaning a bluff.
Very true.
Right? Meaning a bluff. So we want to be able to comprehend. So, okay, again, we're dealing with this concept of, you know, Gameaholic coin, and someone may be playing it like a game of cards. At the end of the day, you know, you want to understand how to play. And, okay, in this game of poker, for example, you know, like they say, you need to know when to hold them, know when to fold.
When to fold them, yep.
Right? Because that's a form of investment. Once you decide to go in on the hand, you've made the initial investment. Like, yeah. Okay, these two cards look good, right? That's what it's like. These two cards look good. I'm going to go in, right? Now, somebody on the table may raise the value. Like you said, right now, barrier to entry, half a penny. Not even a big issue, right?
Nice.
And there was at some point, Bitcoin was like that. And how much would it be worth if you had put up just, you know, a $50 investment in Bitcoin when it was worth a half a penny?
Wow.
Yeah, there was actually an article about.
There
was actually an article about someone in the Netherlands that bought $27 in Bitcoin back in 2009. Forgot about it for 4 years, and it's now they found it again sometime last year, and it's now $888,000 or something like that. From that $27 in Bitcoin that they bought.
I need to get them on my case then. I need to find my lost Bitcoin from 2011.
This is serious right
now,
right? This is serious. Like, we're at the very beginning of the hand right now. That's what I'm saying. We're at the very, very beginning of the hand. And it's very, very cheap to enter this hand, right? Like, it's not always that, you know, you got, you know, we'll say, I don't know, two kings, two aces, right? You know, it's not so often that you get that. So, you know, you kind of want to raise the barrier to entry. I'm sure, you know, Anari, you would love for the value of the coin to already be at a certain level. But right now, it's fairly cheap to get in on the hand. And I think that right now, especially based upon what you've described, so everything that you're describing, Anari, you have to know from my position, because I'm a Texas Hold'em man. I'm looking at it like that from the very beginning. I want to see what the two cards look like. So your explanation as to what is Gameaholic Coin, you know, what is the platform and how does it benefit the user, and, you know, this whole capacity of, wow, I could use these for trade. You know what I mean? I could use Gameaholic for trade. I can actually, you know, get on a trading platform and trade this. Like, it's just like that at the casino, right? I can buy food. I can buy whatever it is that I want with casino chips.
Very true.
You know what I mean? With a casino chip, especially while I'm in the casino. So now it's the same concept. It's the exact same concept here. Like, I'm understanding that I want to understand more about Gameaholic. I want to understand, what is the potential of this hand, these two cards that I'm holding? What's the potential? And when we talk about Bitcoin, because that's really one of the only things that we can compare it to, Bitcoin has about $6 billion behind it, right? Mm-hmm. So now you were talking on our first episode, and I'd like for you to kind of demonstrate again. How much money is behind the gaming economy? Because I understand you have the ability to capture, if not all, majority of the gaming economy and have it on the Gamerholic platform.
Well, there's definitely an opportunity for that. Right. A lot of the bigger gaming companies, be it Blizzard, they are launching their own cryptocurrency, but it's not Bitcoin, and I think they want to keep it a closed ecosystem. Right, they're already making tons and tons of money of regular transactions, and I'm pretty sure crypto transactions just makes it easier for everybody. Virtual reality, you've seen a lot of the VR videos, a lot of the VR glasses. No one is going to take their VR goggles off to pull out their credit cards. It's just not going to work that way. So the entire gaming economy is an open space where anybody can play in it in this new crypto world. The opportunity that we're presenting with Gamerholic Coin is that we're making it easy for any game developer to be able to accept Gamerholic Coin within his or her game. It doesn't matter if it's a game developer in Nigeria. It doesn't matter if it's a game developer in Canada, right? I'm taking the bet that a currency for gaming, a cryptocurrency for gaming, will have just as many transactions as a currency in the real world, if not more, simply because of how gaming works. I'm taking a gamble that there will always be an item of value in a video game, right? Someone is always going to be willing to pay premium for an avatar, for, you know, a weapon that they need. Whatever the case is, it's always going to move the price of the coin up, right? The infrastructure that we build with mining, it's a coin that can be mined using the very same SHA-256 miner that you use to mine Bitcoin anyway. So for folks who were mining Bitcoin before you using an old miner that came out 3 years ago and you have it locked away in the garage now, pull that out there and start mining Gamerholic Coin with that. There's no new expense to get started mining Gamerholic Coin. So it doesn't matter if it's trading, it doesn't matter if it's playing, it doesn't matter if it's participating as a game developer, doesn't matter if it's mining or even participating as a publisher. There are avenues all around.
Wow. Like, I still want it, though. I still want it, Inari. What are the numbers associated with gaming? Like, I want you to put it in the billions. What is the gaming world, the gaming industry worth?
Well, it's a mega billion-dollar industry, right? You include China, you include South Korea, you include, my goodness, I mean, we haven't even touched what it could be yet. There's still so many countries to come on board. You know what's going to happen to gaming once, you know, Facebook turns on that they're going to be flying all over Africa providing internet, or when Google starts sending balloons all over the world providing internet? I mean,
right.
it's only going to grow like 5, 10x more, right?
Yeah.
Everybody who has mobile phones, there are young people all over the planet. There are gamers everywhere.
What is the estimate now?
Well, as far as the entire industry combined?
Yes, sir.
I don't know that exact number, to be quite honest with you. Right.
Estimate would be wonderful, because I know it's in the billions as you're describing all the consoles.
Yeah, just from League of Legends alone. I mean, Legends is a $1 billion company. Right now, here is a relatable story. Right. I know that everybody wants to hear the romantic 50 billion number and the billions and billions. But those are romantic numbers.
Look,
they're romantic numbers that seem unreal to some. Okay? All right, so let's use a real example. So last year when I was in Harlem, right, I brought aboard a young man, Christopher Gonçalves, something like that. Right? He was very excited about gaming. He was in the Bitcoin. He had his own startup that he was doing at the time that was a messaging thing, right? But he really, really liked Gamerholic and sure, okay, cool, you can come on board, you can join, so on and so forth. He was an efficient trader on his own, so he had a little bit of cash that he said he was going to invest into Gamerholic, right? We built that small team. You've seen the pictures on Facebook of all of us selling in Harlem and so on and so forth. It didn't work out that way with that team, right? But he decided to go off on his own and launch his own gaming company called Esports Hero. And they just recently raised $1 million a month and a half ago. They were able to bring on board a Sony executive who invested, a previous Sony executive or higher-ranking Sony gaming executive who invested quite a bit of cash in the company. So between a year, able to raise $1 million for his company. Right. And this is somebody that is, you know, in Harlem. Well, actually, he lived that up on Mamaroneck. But this is what's going on right now in the gaming space and how quickly folks are able to capitalize. Right. Mark Cuban is invested in gaming. Rick Fox, $1 million for a gaming team. $1 million for one gaming team. That's just a team. That's like 3-4 people. Right, so he's going to fly them all over the world. They go to various tournaments, and if they win a tournament, sponsorships and so on and so forth that come along with it. So even if you're just a gamer, but you're really, really good, you now have people who are taking interest in gaming to the manner where they'll come and buy your team of $4 million. Right, there's a lot of money in gaming, but from our side, there's still some things we're going to have to execute because it's still mind-blowing that there isn't $1 billion black-owned gaming company. Like I know I mentioned this last time, but every time I think about it, it's like, what, we don't play video games? How is there not a black-owned billion-dollar gaming company? A black man invented the video game, for crying out loud.
That's what I'm talking about. At the end of the day,
that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, you're killing it right now, Nari. I apologize for interrupting you. Free, I wanted to give you an opportunity. I don't know if you want to take the conversation in a different direction. Did you have any questions?
Well, no, not really, man. Like he said, it just, you know, there needs to be a lot of more black-owned everything. You know what I mean? Like that. For us to put as much money forth in everyone else's economy, you know what I mean? And it's like, you kind of get the feeling like when a black person goes to another black person, ask them to invest in each other, they kind of look at each other like, well, why should I invest in you? You know what I mean? It's like, why do you have to feel like that? But I think we're breaking that ground and showing, you know, the different markets that we're involved in. Why are we not involved? If you're wearing a pair of Nikes, you should have stock in Nike. If you're playing video games, you should have
Word
stock
up.
In some video game company.
Word
some
up.
Some sort of. So, you know what I mean? This brother has put together a gaming platform that you can put some money behind right away. So, I mean, like you said, the bar to entry is very low. You know, so, man, this is a solution.
It is a lot of out of sight, out of mind, though. It's not, obviously, I don't think it's anything anyone is doing intentionally. No one is saying, oh, I'm intentionally not going to download this guy's video game because he's black. I don't think we're doing that. But it's just that, so no one talks about it, no one sees it, so no one thinks about it. And it went back to what I said earlier about we just don't understand what is and what isn't our economy. Like, black poverty is impossible. I don't want to say that in a cynical way, but it really is impossible, right? Who are you getting your clothes from? Who are you getting your baby diapers from? Who are you getting your baby food from? Well, if you're not getting it from each other, that's why you're poor. It's impossible.
No, you know what? As much as this is futuristic and, you know, very, very profound, this is actually rather basic. And I think what you're talking about is very relevant. Continue.
Much appreciated.
It's just basic, Inari. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, sometimes you have to slow it down because I think we've been very high-paced. You know, we've been very, you know, fast. I think that a lot of the listeners, especially the first-time listeners, if they don't know anything about, you know, cryptocurrency, what is it to understand that you've made one, you know, as far as the Gameaholic coin? If they don't understand, you know, the nature of just what it is that we're talking about, I think we're talking about it very fast. So every now and again, we should even slow it down to the basic necessities of life. You know, I think that sometimes the listener may feel that this is a novelty. And what mm-hmm. I'm here to say is that it's not a novelty. It's not, you know, computer science, developing applications, going into mobile. These aren't far away concepts. These are things that people are dealing with every day. You know, so with that being said, Inari, like what I'm really talking about right now is again, just going back to the nuts and the bolts of Gameaholic and et cetera. How many man hours would you say have been put into Gameaholic at this point?
Wow. I think you can count that by how many X's, actually.
I think that's important. No. The reason why I ask is not to be facetious. It's to say that, first and foremost, it can be done, right? If you see one human being do it, another human being can do it. So now, it goes back to like being, you know, I'll relate it to basketball, right? Michael Jordan. You know, it's common knowledge that Michael Jordan would wake up 6 o'clock in the morning, if not earlier, and shoot a certain number, 100 of jump shots before another, you know, within an hour.
Shoot that.
Right, just in terms of practice. So I would like for you to literally, like, even if you're putting forth an estimate, I feel that an estimate is just as valuable as the exact number, because sometimes you want it rounded, right? Sometimes it's not necessary to know how many hours exactly. But you've gone very far with your cryptocurrency and the platform that supports the cryptocurrency. So I think our listeners will be very interested in knowing how many man hours, if you had to put an estimate. It doesn't matter that you had a team or not, right? It doesn't matter that you contracted a certain amount of work out or not. How many man hours are associated?
All right. I would say about 10,000 man hours. Let's just we'll round it up to 10, round it up or down to 10,000 man hours. It's likely more because we're looking at years, but let's just say 10,000 man hours, right? But once the really hard work is done, and you reached a certain point, it obviously becomes a lot easier. Right, you build faster, you code faster, so you're not really bogged down with the things that you'll bogged down with the first 2,000 hours, right? And you know exactly like you said, if I can do it, anybody can do it. Now, again, I didn't code the cryptocurrency; I outsourced that. Right, I don't have the skills to even try to put security around something like that. So I had to pay for somebody else to do that. But as far as the platform, the site, the app, all that, I developed myself, and that's within 10,000 man hours. Now, it's going to be much easier for folks to get started today because the technologies that are available to teach you how to code are way better than what I had when I first started. There's a platform called freecodecamp.com where you can teach yourself how to code for free. There are tons of other platforms or services that you can use and videos that you can use and watch to teach yourself how to code.
Awesome. Free, did you have a follow-up question?
No, I think it's, getting close to the hour, so we've got contact information and everything like that, and yeah, man. I think what the opportunity that you've given us to deal with this the investment consortium through springboarding off of your coin is excellent. I mean, I have to hats off to you, for being able to supply the Gameaholic coin to get this rolling too as well. So,
all right, perfect. I'm very happy to do so. I'm really, really relieved and excited that you guys are participating. Even if it's not something that works out, right? And I'm not saying this to, you know, to down the moment or whatever. I'm just saying this in the spirit of try again. You know, you got in Gamer Holler coin. The coin didn't go up, you know, the way that you expected. Maybe it went down. You took a loss. Whatever. Try again. All right. It's okay for us to fail as many times as possible to reach success. Don't think just because it didn't work out the first time that, okay, that's it. It didn't work. That's that. I've been doing this for quite some time. The coin isn't going anywhere. Gameaholic isn't going anywhere. I am 100% committed to building the very first black-owned billion-dollar gaming company. And if you guys ride with me, I promise you that everybody will win in the process. But don't get discouraged if the initial outcomes. I'm not promising you millions of dollars or $10,000 in Gamer Holocaust. In any kind of wild claims and wild promises, I'm saying, though, just participate, engage, educate other people about it. The minute you start trading Gamer Holler coin, you're going to put yourself in a better position to start trading other things. All of a sudden, you want to get into Forex. You want to start trading stocks yourself. Or, you know what, you might decide that you want to use Ethereum own coin for your own neighborhood and your own culture or your own background, whatever the case is. It's an education step that is 100% needed.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Inari, I'm going to follow up with the question. You opened up a can of worms. I have to let you know that. I hope you can stick around for at least, you know, however long it takes you to explain what you'd like to explain about Ethereum. But any contact information that you want to give out, I want to make sure that we have an opportunity to do that. You will have to actually call in to the contact number. That's 213-325-3434 if you want to hear any more. Inari, I don't know how much more time you have available, but the live stream will be over in about 3 minutes or so. So I'd like for you to give out your contact information so they can go to you direct.
Yeah, I'll stay on for as long as anyone have any questions. I came on late, so I'll that's not a problem at all. But you can always reach out to me on Facebook. I've made some comments in a group if you want to find my Facebook page. You know the platforms, Gameraholic. The Grab It game, please download. That's pretty much the best way. I'm through Facebook.
All right. So we're at the 90-second marker. Inari, again, for those listeners that haven't called in yet, again, the call-in number is 213-325-3434 if you'd like to continue to listen on, but the live stream will cut off if you don't call in. I'm so glad that you brought up Ethereum.
Okay.
Ethereum is going to be rather interesting. You had mentioned that on the very first call. You said, you know, but if you wait too long to understand Bitcoin, then you're going to have to jump to Ethereum just because it seems that that this is where this is going as far as the decentralized technology.
True.
Part in the background. So with that being said, Inari, tell us about your experience with Ethereum. What have you developed thus far? And the reason why I ask is our next guest is actually the president of the Bitcoin Club at MIT.
Okay,
his name
nice.
Is Nchenda. He's from Cameroon, right? So he has done an internship already with Consensus.
Okay.
And, you know, he's gonna talk to us a little bit about that. He's gonna talk to us a little bit about Ethereum, putting together the Bitcoin expo there at MIT. But
okay.
What I'd like to know is what have you done thus far with Ethereum, and why do you say, you know, if you're late to the party, you need to understand Ethereum. Go ahead.
Well, so far I haven't done Ethereum asset of just trade Ethereum and hold on to a few ethers. I was very happy when it went from $5 to $11. So just reading about the technology of Ethereum, okay, it's a very interesting read on the possibilities that presents, right? The focus being on smart contracts and how businesses will be operated moving forward, right? I think I had mentioned this last time where HR departments could be run by Ethereum smart contracts where you're given 10 hours of work. Let's say you're a coder, right? And the minute that you submit this many lines of code, 50% of your pay will be released to you on the blockchain. You submit another 75% of the code, another 25% of your payment is released. So me, as the person who hired you, I don't check anything. All you have to do is submit the code. Something else will review that the code actually functions and works correctly, and your money is released to you as the program is written. That makes contracts very, very, very powerful. And it's not just contracts between me and you. It's pretty much anything now that can be settled and executed on the blockchain without anybody, without any third party being present, right? So one of the more fascinating use cases is land records. So in Sierra Leone and many other countries, especially you have folks going in and buying up swaths of land without the government knowing about it, and definitely without the people who are selling the land getting the fair value of it. But if all this is stored on the blockchain, if all this is stored on the minute the conversation starts about buying land, or if you want to buy that land, you're going to have to execute that contract on the blockchain. And if you're not going to pay the value for it, it's not going to go through. So you can imagine how drastically that changes things, be it in Sierra Leone. Ecuador is one of the places where that land record test on the blockchain was going on. But another more very unique use case, even if you do Airbnb, right? If the transaction was settled on the blockchain, then as soon as I come to your house, I'll just wave my phone in front of your doorknob. It knows it's me. It lets me in. The money goes to you, and the doorknob won't open after 2-3 days past the time that I'm supposed to be there for. And all this is done while, you know, you're away on vacation somewhere else or without anybody else having to check to make sure that it happened or not. All very, very powerful things that Ethereum offers that's really going to change the way that we handle transactions with each other.
I think that's important. I think that's extremely important. You know, I had a conversation not too long ago about, you know, the value of decentralization. But then, you know, I think a lot of people can see that, you know, the idea of being spread out, you know, or what have you, that brings about its own questions or curiosities or, you know what I'm saying, suspicions. And yep. I think at the end of the day, it's about trust. You know, how do you trust the Gameaholic system? How do you trust, you know, the current system? How do you trust the future system, which is, you know, the blockchain system? Because as far as I'm concerned, Inari, I don't know if you feel the same. But, you know, the idea of how we maintain the internet moving forward, the idea of neglecting the blockchain, that's you know what I mean? That's not conducive to reality. That's not conducive to the future. You know, what are your thoughts on moving forward? Go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. I think one of the best arguments of the blockchain is that it does solve the trust problem, right? You don't have to trust me. I don't have to trust you. But we trust that code, and the code is going to run and execute it. regardless how, you know, if you loan me $50, and we had a contract where I'm supposed to repay you that $50 within 2 weeks, and it's being taken from this account where I already have the money in, that contract is going to run regardless how me and you feel about each other in 2 weeks from now. You can hate me, I can hate you, you know, we never talk to each other. Still get me your money back. So the biggest thing that the blockchain solved is the trust problem, right? I spent a little bit of time in East Oakland for about the past month. And there's definitely a major trust difference between San Francisco and East Oakland, which is just a 20-25 minute train ride away. Over here, you know, hey, my name's Anari, I'm an app developer. You know, if you know anybody that wants to build apps, let me know. Okay, cool. Are you on LinkedIn? Cool. Here's my LinkedIn. Within 5 minutes, oh, you look like you're connected. Me and you are connected to the same person. I can hit this person up, find out Anari's skill level if they build apps or not. And within 15 minutes, we can make a decision or we can start talking about securing some kind of work, right? You move over to East Oakland, then it's a completely different cultural experience, right? Do you have a business card? Do you have an office? Well, work out of a Starbucks mostly. You know, it's free. They have high-speed internet, so I don't. And I have a LinkedIn. I don't really do business cards. It's a waste of expense. They won't do business with you in East Oakland if you don't have a business card, right? So in everybody, but it's best business practice that that you do. But just back in San Francisco, that's not the case at all. It's do you have a LinkedIn, and within 15 minutes, we validated you and whether we can do business or not, right? So that major cultural difference over in East Oakland is the reason why there isn't as much wealth being brewed there, because everything moves so much slower. There's not that 15 minutes, right? So that trust issue that our community tends to have, especially Africans don't trust each other for nothing, has been solved through the blockchain. And we can move. We can do business at the speed of light now, regardless how we feel about each other.
That's extremely important. Free, did you have any follow-up questions? We'll go ahead and wrap it up if you don't.
No, sir. Like you said, we're moving at the speed of light. Salute, blockchain, Gamaholic Coin, NBA. We out.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Thanks for your time, fellas.
Yes, sir. I want to say I appreciate it, Anari. I hope to have a follow-up. I know that things will continue to develop further. So we'll definitely want to be in contact, whether it's the gaming world, Gamaholic itself, you know, any innovations associated, we'll definitely want to make sure that we broadcast that as well. With that being said, to the listening audience, I hope that you all have gained a lot from this conversation. Again, if you'd like to participate, one of the first things that you can do is join the Facebook group, NBA Circle of Peers. At that point, you'll find how you can get in as far as with Gamaholic Coin. Anari is also available on Facebook. You can go direct. But yes, please link up with us on Facebook. Share this link. Make sure that your family, those that you love, those that you care about, make sure that they know about this as well. Free, you know what I'm saying? Definitely appreciate you being online. Anari, thank you so much for coming on. Like I said, as far as the tardiness, as far as I'm concerned, as long as you were doing business, brother man, it is to be expected. I appreciate you.
All right. Thank you, Butch. I appreciate that.
All right, family. Thank you so much for joining us on the House of the Moorish King, and we will see you next Thursday. Peace and love.
All right, be easy. Peace.